Hello?
Dr. Fisher! Dr. Fisher, it's me, it's Jerry! It's Jerry, the Night King! Jerry, oh God!
Jerry, this is my personal number. We discussed you're not supposed to...
Personal number, Dr. Fisher! Come on, give me a break, buddy. I just got... I'm in crisis! I'm in crisis, and I'm calling you in an emergency.
Well, if you're having an emergency, you should hang up and you should call 911 and go to the hospital.
I was stabbed, Dr. Fisher. I was stabbed by a little girl, and I'm come all undone. I'm in crisis, and I'm calling you for help. You're my therapist.
Well, I think what we should do is you should schedule an appointment in the office. This is not appropriate for you to be calling me on my personal number, Jerry.
Oh, that's rich. That's rich. You know what? You have no problem cashing my checks, but as soon as something goes wrong for me, really wrong, I was stabbed by a little girl, and it took me forever to put the pieces back together. I call you in crisis, and you're just telling me to call and make an appointment. Well, that's what I'm here for.
Jerry, an appointment. I'm going to hang up now.
It's the bigness of the office. It's the bigness of the transactions. It's the bigness of the deals.
Kind of a big deal.
It's the bigness of the office. It's the bigness of the transactions. It's the bigness of the deals.
Kind of a big deal. I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Season two. Season two.
Welcome. Yes, yeah. Welcome, D. We're back. It's season two.
Doesn't it feel season two-y?
It is. It's kind of two-y. Yep. A little chewy.
So season two, and you know, number two is the shit. So you guys, welcome to the beginning of the shit.
Of the shit.
Yeah.
This is, and we are now officially been branded. Darren and I are a big deal.
A big deal.
Welcome back. We got a great season ahead of you in this our episode tonight. We're going to be talking about Bay Area filmmaking.
That's right, Bay Area filmmaking. Although some people are listening from SoCal, we up here in NorCal have our own little ragtag group of filmmakers up here, and we wrangled one of them for a minute to talk
more guerrilla style. So yeah. It was a fun interview with Ben, and looking forward to sharing that. But Dee, in true season two style, would be big deal? We're going to do the big deal news.
Oh, good. I'm glad that the news got rebranded too, because I don't think people were taking this seriously, and I think this is going to tie it all together.
Because our news is a very big deal. So
it's a very big deal, and it's not always about GoBots. So you know, is this about GoBots?
I'm going to scratch the first one here.
Okay, so it's just kill that one off, and we'll go into something after that.
Our first story of the evening comes from Kotaku. Riot to make a mobile version of League of Legends with Tencent. You know Tencent, the giant Chinese yeah. firm. So it seems that everybody is just going mobile, whether it's Fortnite or League of Legends, or even I read in PC Gamer Blizzard is doing all of their IP into mobile. So
they're going to go back and do all of their shit.
All of their shit. So it's just everybody is going mobile. And then also Tencent seems to be involved in everything. So Snap Games also launched yesterday with Tencent. So
Is Tencent what they pay their employees? I mean, it's a Chinese company, and right? I mean, does it go a long way? Just ruthlessly racist. I have no filter, and it just comes out. I'm sorry. Like any game that takes 45 minutes to play, if you're playing it on your phone, you're just going to get hit by a car. So you know. These people are trying to kill you, America. So,
would you rather them at least be engaged in some sort of entertainment, redeeming entertainment value?
I mean, it makes it easier to kill them, but yeah, I mean, I think that's yeah.
So, in case our phones weren't riveting enough, we're going to have all of our major game.
I just hope we don't lose all of our sponsors. I hope that doesn't happen.
All right, our next news story of the evening of the HuffPost says Aladdin just threw some blue on Will Smith and expected us to be okay with it.
Oh, I've been trying not to look, but there's a big poster because I live over by Oakland Airport, and there's a big poster of the blue man right there.
I think they just got too excited by Beauty and the Beast or Lion King, and they were just like, "Yeah, let's just." What's the next one on the list?
That's right. It was Lion King, then it was Beauty and the Beast. I've forgotten, and it's, you know, they've only it's sort of a no brainer for them, right? They're like, "We already have the script." Wing.
Yeah, right? But I don't think you can just. I mean, first of all, it's kind of weird, right? Guy Ritchie directed this one, right? Isn't this guy? So he's used to doing action movies and the British gangster stuff and whatever. He's kind of like that guy who does all the Time Ramp, and so here he is doing a musical with Will Smith, and it just doesn't seem. I mean, I haven't really seen any of this, so I can't talk. But I feel like it's a hilarious.
I watched The Jungle Book as I was trying to sort of see, is this a movie that like I can watch with a 5-year-old, because it came out a couple of years ago, and there's like way more murder in that movie than there was in the cartoon Jungle Book. By that I mean there is some murder, so I was just like, okay, well, so no, but yeah, I mean, like with this one. Instead of used to impersonate like a genie, or are they going at all like ethnically with the cast? I haven't even really looked at anybody but the blue man in it.
No, so, I mean, I think they have sort of Indianish actors.
Well, that's wonderful. At least there's that. At least,
well, they say it's kind of like a rom-com, right? They say it's like a sweet movie, but then Will Smith shows up and does these things that were. I mean, the thing about the original Aladdin, which a lot of people don't really realize, is that Robin Williams was just kind of like completely off the hook. And he just took the script and shoved it into his like improvisational shotgun and just blew it into pieces.
Yeah.
And they were rewriting on the fly.
I would imagine that they were, yeah.
And they didn't know how to do with it. And so I think it was kind of like this weird thing. Like literally it was capturing like a genie in the bottle in this very rare way. So – taking Will Smith and then making him blue and then making him to kind of do the musical numbers again. I don't know. I can't talk. I haven't seen it yet, nor do I really feel
it. Like the Fresh Prince of Alibaba or Ababwe.
But he's only blue in like intermittently. Like
he's not blue all the time?
No, he winds up becoming just sort of like Will Smith in, you know, Indian prince gear.
Yeah, because he was like, I don't want to fucking show up at like 3 o'clock in the morning for you guys make me blue.
Yeah.
So I can go on at 8. Yeah. Of course not.
Well, if anyone has seen this film, let us know.
Yeah. It's coming out. Doesn't it come out this week?
It's already out, I think.
Yeah. We are glued in. We have our fingers on the pulse of the Hollywood releases.
On the big deal pulse.
Yeah.
Our next story is from Wired. As social VR grows, users are the one building worlds. So they're talking about Rec Room, which is one of the larger titles that's on VR. It's basically a VR app that allows you to build your own room and then invite your friends in. And so people are decorating their rooms, and then increasingly people who are spending time in VR are just hanging out in these rooms. They do an experience for a little while, but then they go to one of these rooms and then they hang out with their friends. So this is in this month's Wired. Check this out, because this is exactly what I've been saying, is that increasingly social networks are just going to be, you know, virtual places where people hang out and decorate.
God damn it. Like, this is what we're using technology for, folks. I mean, if that doesn't piss you off, then you're probably in one of those rooms, like, you know, putting up a poster of Blade Runner or whatever the fuck.
Well, I mean, the thing is, on Fortnite, I think Michael Jordan just released some his Jordans in Fortnite.
Like, really?
You can buy virtual Jordans to put on your Fortnite characters.
Oh, God. So how much can I pay for that?
I'm sure they're probably charging $20 for sneakers or something.
That's fucking brilliant. You used to have to be able to spend $20 for an entire video game. Now you can get digital shoes.
Yeah, exactly. So our last one of the night is to keep tabs on the AI world. This is from Futurism. It says, here's where you can flirt with a sexting AI bot called Slutbot.
Come on. Come on. You're making shit up because you're trying to antagonize me. I know it's been a while since we've done this.
I swear to God, Slutbot.
God damn it. I'm so horny right now. That's the problem. I mean, you said Slutbot, and I, you know.
So the funny thing about this article is that they are they think it's a benefit, because they think that there's a lot of people who are concerned about their sexuality or don't know how to express themselves.
And want to fire it at AI.
So they want, yeah. So they want to be able to practice. So it was about like how, you know, gay or trans people don't know how to like flirt or something. And so,
oh my God, poor gay and trans people. They don't know how to do anything. Oh my God.
It's a crazy world, man. It's a crazy
That's
world.
Fucking dynamite. I have to say, we used to have to do that too, but we used to have to go to bars and buy each other fucking happy hour drinks to figure out.
But now you can save so much money by just downloading SmartBot. See what we're doing.
It'll be perfect. That way you'll only have to flirt one time and then you can get married to that person. And that's way more efficient. And then when the AI eventually makes a machine and puts us all into the matrix, they'll put us together. With the person that
I think it's great that when you start a relationship and people are like, wow, you are so good at flirting with me. They're like, that's okay. I practiced on SlutBot
before. You're like, yeah. You're like a level 5 flirter. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, SlutBot gave me level 7, but I mean, out in the real world, I mean, I think that translates to level 5. And then you can use like World of Warcraft Platinum to like buy her a drink that has Michael Jordan shoes on it.
Somewhere. Oh God. Yes. Season 2 is just more of
just grumpier, more cantankerous, more get off my lawn. Again, you're welcome. Listeners and anybody who's listening to this just because they want to hear Jen Caster Remington's music, that's coming. There will be some.
So when we come back, we're going to be talking to Ben Mulholland. This was an interview we did with a Bay Area filmmaker. I really enjoyed this. He's really up our alley of the kind of content. And you've also worked with him.
I've worked with him a couple of times. I've known him since like 2000, I think. A buddy of mine shot me an email, said you should audition for this guy, and it was all the way out in SF State. So it was one of those like auditions where it was like a journey because it takes like an hour and a half to go anywhere on a Muni train in San Francisco. And when I met him, he's just this dude who's got these crazy visions, and he's just all hopped up on all of these really. I mean, I think I know about mythology, but he has like a mythology lore base that's like way past like Greek and Roman gods and stuff like that. And
I think his focus is like low budget action. You know, I mean,
those things and he puts them into, you know, like what he can get away with, which is in the Bay Area. You gotta go low budget or no budget.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed this interview. So I hope you enjoy it. Coming up right after Jen's musical interlude.
Yep. A little bit of Ben
is our first interview of season 2. Ben Mulholland. We'll be right back.
Right back. Thank you. I can't believe you stuck around for this. And I know you didn't do it just to listen to me. You stuck around because the guest today, very, very Oakland, Bay Area centric filmmaker. Yeah,
you're keeping it NorCal today.
Yeah, no, I don't. You Long Beach people, you need to just sort of park it and sort of hang out because this is Bay Area today. We have Ben Mulholland with us today. Ben has been making films in the Bay Area for I mean, almost 20 years, right, Ben? I mean, like, you've been at this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, maybe I guess more? So. It's been like, let's just say 20. That way I don't have to go older.
We're trying to skew young. I appreciate you doing that for us, Ben. We're trying to get the youth of today. That's who
we are. You're amongst all kinds of old men right now.
Oh, my God. It's so sad. It's just their. How many pills and unguents and ointments I had to rub and salves, you know, just to get the old creaky bones moving, dude. It's terrible.
So you guys know each other well, but I don't know you very well. In fact, I've just met you, Ben. So why don't you give a little bit of background on who you are and what you do, and just so I can know who you are.
Like the back of a G.I. Joe card, Ben. Just give us like height, weight, all the weapons you're practiced in. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been I've been doing this since I guess, you know, 2000. Not before that, actually. The first movie I made was in like sixth grade or something.
Yeah.
Something crazy. See, like that's, that. But,
that's how the sickness is, right? I mean, it just sort of took hold early and never, never went away. Yeah.
They give you the drugs when you're sick, when you're 12.
what was that movie when you were 12? Like,
what was that, man?
I mean,
So I started with music videos for my friends. I think we were doing like Metallica videos.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then what was our first movie? It was just like, I think it was like a skateboard movie or something. It was just kids skateboarding. Right. And we had a beginning and a middle, like, you know, you get on the skateboard, you skateboard and you fall off. And that's the movie.
That's a lot. I feel like you were watching me because that's the only thing I can do on a skateboard.
And this was film, right? Like, were you shooting film? Back in the day,
you know what? Actually, when I first started, we were shooting like VHS video, and then
I didn't cut
film, and we were doing like AB rolling on like three-quarter inch and maybe Beta. You remember Beta?
Oh yeah.
And then I didn't touch film until I got to SF State, where we were cutting like 16 millimeter, and then we were cutting. Well, now I'm having a brain fart. I don't remember what kind of film I was.
32. Yeah.
We're cutting 32 millimeter. So
you came out to the Bay Area to like go to SF State, or I mean, what's your?
I was already out.
I don't know. Yeah, were you? Did you originate in the Bay Area, or did you come from somewhere else? I've never even asked you that.
I've lived everywhere, man. I've lived in Hawaii. I grew up mostly in Hawaii, and I lived in Long Beach even, so hey, be nice to Long Beach.
Oh, man. I had no idea I was going to get ganged up on by the Long Beachers.
No, it's so okay. I don't have that many fond memories of Long Beach. I got chased by a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
But it was, I've lived in Vegas. I've lived in
Dude, when did you live in Vegas?
Colorado. I went to high school in Vegas, like 1 year of junior high and 2 years of high school in Vegas.
No shit. Holy shit.
And I didn't.
And you didn't burst into flame in the summer? I mean, like, how did you?
No, it's awesome when you're young, man. You know, you can handle heat, cold, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's hot. I'll just walk around. It's fine. No need for water.
Yeah. Old people just get tired looking at you, kind of thing. Yeah.
And then you were like, okay, I got to make movies, right? Is that, or what was the,
you know, I had always, in high school, I started making these like sequels to Hollywood movies with friends of mine. And then, I got into college and we made Bad Boys 2 before Bad Boys 2 came out, which was kind of funny.
Fantastic. Yeah. We love it.
And we had like, Keenan wasn't in that. I was with two friends of mine, Brandon Callender and Aaron Smith. And like, I was the camera. That was like one of my first like directing. Like I actually directed scenes, and I remember we copied the Michael Bay, you know, swing around
the camera, the spin around.
Oh, yeah, they spin around, yeah. And it's like we had we got in trouble because we had a car chase through the middle of the parking lot in the front of the school.
That's how you do it, man. You gotta go rogue for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then we're like, oh, we'll just crash the car right here, and we had like, you know, I don't know, some kind of, we had the hood up or something, and.
Yeah,
they tackled the bad guys, and then I did the shot, and it was, you know.
Dude, how much credit did you get for doing like a chase scene in the parking lot of your school? Did people just want to be you? Because I mean, that's sort of dream level status.
Yeah, it was kind of like it was basically three of us because they had this really horrible video production class, is what it was called, and it was like. Televisions and two VHSs were like our editing machines. And one of the VHSs had was like the old school pop up out of furniture VHSs.
Oh my God. Yeah. Ejector seats sort of tape.
Yeah. Or. Yeah. It was just like we were editing on that. And we kind of got popular off of that because I did Bad Boys 2 first and then we did the sequel to the Mac. And we had all these girls like, you know, basically my
not like not Mac and Me. You didn't do a sequel
like
to
Richard
McDonald's.
Richard Pryor the Mac.
Oh yeah. Sorry, so I just wanted to make a dig at Mac and Me. That I wanted to take a shit at Mac and Me.
So how did you get serious? Like what
Yeah, when did you decide I want to go to college for this shit? When did you do that?
I don't know, man. There's nothing else I really wanted to study. My mom was kind of like, you should. I was like, I'm going to go to this film school. And she was like, well, you should get a business degree. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do business. I'm just going to get a film degree, you know, because you're 18 and you know any fucking better. So
yeah.
No, we know that story very well.
Yeah, we've heard similar stories. Yeah, they're like, don't do this.
Yeah, like I'm like, don't go to school for filmmaking. I mean, if you do, you go to school like to USC or NYU. You don't fuck around with anything else.
Right.
So I applied to both USC and NYU. I got into both and then looked at the price tag and was like, fuck, I can't do it because I'm poor. I ended up
going that's back a few days. I can't imagine what that is now. I mean, like that's back a few years.
It was way cheaper. It was like it was cheaper than San Francisco State is now to go to USC. NYU was always expensive. Like there was just no way I was going to NYU.
Yeah, no.
But I went. I was like, I'm going to go to USC, and then like I went down to LA, and I was like, I don't really like LA that much. Sorry, LA people.
LA and then, people don't care. They don't. That's part of the deal.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. And so then I was like, well, SF State's got a good reputation as like this avant-garde school. I'll just go there. I'm already here.
Yeah.
So I went there, and I think I really got serious when I made this little short film in the library on 16 millimeter and like met some cool like DP guys. And then I did the film with Darren in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of my tenure.
Yeah. I remember that. Cause weren't you staying on campus? Did you have a place on campus? Like over in the, no,
I was working on campus, but I had a bunch of friends. Yeah. I was living in Oakland, man. I was crashing on in San Francisco a lot, but I was like living in Oakland. And then I just like, I got to the end of film school, and the really shitty part about like your bachelor's degree is they don't make you make a film to graduate. Like you could literally go through film school and not make a fucking movie. So
same thing happened in animation school. Like I was like one of two out of like 100 that actually made an animated short.
It got you so much traction too. Like if you hadn't have done that, if you hadn't have put the work forward, if you hadn't have generated
your own. But it's amazing. That's how like schools are. They just kind of like need to shuffle. It's just numbers really, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we got to the end of it and I was like, fuck, I need to make a movie. So I just, I made up this movie.
Yeah, dude, that was back when you could probably just run into the Presidio and just sort of shoot for a couple of days and not worry about it. Cause that's what we did.
I mean, no, I had to luckily my mom knew someone at the Presidio cause she used to work for the federal government. So she's like, call this person.
Fantastic.
So I called him up and I was like, hey, I want to shoot this movie. And they're like, okay, great. Shoot away. And I was like, it has guns in it. And they're like, oh, well come in.
Yeah.
And so like, it was just literally like, I went in and told him I was shooting and we had like blanks and guns and like just shit we shouldn't have had.
Yeah, we had a lot of shit we shouldn't have had.
But that sounds awesome. What was it about?
It was this movie called Live Intel and it was about like the Patriot Act and like this SWAT team going into these people's home and basically tying them up and extraditing torturing them to a black cell site.
Yeah.
But then they like get shot and there's a whole thing and like
and they don't find anything.
Yeah, they don't find anything. And they're like, oh shit. And then they accidentally shoot one of the guys. Of course he's black.
They're like we had to like try to figure out a way to make like a dirty bomb to like sort of
cover it.
Yeah, that was sort of the cover up was can we make a dirty bomb with the shit that's in this house?
Something crazy. Like it was something off the wall like that. The thing I always, whenever, you know, me and Darren talk about is I had him, like I actually gave him a real battering ram to like bust open that door. And he had to like run up that hill with a battering ram. Like,
take after time. I'm like the skinniest, no muscliest. I got like no pipes, no guns, you know, like I'm just like. And like by the third take, I think at one point you were like, I can't have people watching this thinking that this guy's in the SWAT team. He doesn't move fast enough and he's not strong enough. And so I think, and if anybody had ever seen that movie, I think you'd probably see the frame is just is just outside of me. Like you can almost make out the front of the battering ram, just enough to know that it's there. And then it's probably, yeah.
So what happened with the movie? Like after like you did, you made this, did you put it in the festivals or what was it? Or is it just sort of like,
it never like got released. Like I cut it for like a year and a half and couldn't make it work.
Oh man.
Like, I literally fucked it. I shot extra like stuff, like cutaways. Like I just had scenes that just never were not lived. Working. Yeah. It's there's a cut somewhere hidden away.
Well, and you've used parts of the audio tracks in other films.
Sure.
Yeah.
It still served its usefulness, but like, I mean, I shot that movie on like $1,000. Like, I don't even know if it was that much. It was like, I think it was like maybe $1,000. Like, the house we were in, there was toilet problems. Like,
God. Yeah. Yeah. But your mom brought like incredible food, like the last day of shooting. She brought like dynamite shit.
That movie served as like, you know, a do's and don't of filmmaking. Like that was kind of like, whether it worked or not, I learned so much on that movie.
So much. Yeah. I mean, I think that's really the point, right? Like is if you're going to learn, you just kind of have to like do it, try to get something done and just put it out. And, you know, that's the struggle is that like most of the stuff you make when the early days, it's just going to be crap. You have to
take your hits.
You have to grind, right?
Yeah.
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 Well, so then, Ben, you go on, and then is that you get a job at Kago then, or when do you?
After I made that movie, I think I was editing that movie, and then I applied to like K-Top. I don't even remember applying to K-Top. I don't remember at all. And I think like, cause the city works really slow. So I think like 8 months after I applied, they call me up and like, "Hey man, you want to come in for an interview?" And I'm like, "To what?"
Yeah, who are you?
And they're like, "K-Top, it's a television station." I was like, "Fuck yeah, let's go." Cause I was working as like, I don't know. What was I doing? I was working doing like facilities for San Francisco State and.
Yeah, I remember one time, like I came by and your office was in the SF Mart, that's like San Francisco, like the mall that's like sort of down there because
you're working
a detail out of because they have a satellite school there or something.
Yeah, I was working in like a satellite down in back on it was what was that street? It's one of those, you know, downtown Market Street places, and they just had like. Yeah, they just were up on the 26th floor, and it was like during the .com thing, and so there was like great catering, and it was like a chill job, and just move some tables, like, you know, great benefits.
So you know, K-Top finally calls you.
Yeah, they call me. I go in there, and then I spend the next 15 years there, doing a lot of busy work for the city and directing. Finally, like directing and writing stuff for the city, which is what I do now, and then. Making two or three movies in the process.
What kind of stuff do you do for the job? Like making movies for the city? Is that like, you know,
it's like about training videos. It's like live switching, council meetings, things like that. So it's like a super, it's a super day job, but it's in, you know, it was in the industry. So
yeah.
And it gets comfortable.
Gets you the practice you need to kind of do stuff. And then you're also like, you're around your equipment.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like doing that, right? So you've got mm-hmm. the traction to be able to spend time doing that. So
you've
been working on stuff on the side then, kind of like your side stuff, right?
Yeah, I would do the first movie I did while I was at K-Top was called Moab, which was like I shot that with like $500. It was about like the United States being invaded by
And that's on your IMDb page. Moab's made your IMDb.
Moab was awesome. That actually attracted, I don't even know if I ever got paid or have any proof of this, but it attracted the United States, like, what was it? The National Defense or something? It was something like some kind of defense organization saw the movie and was like, "Can we show this for training?"
Wow.
Like that's how like realistic it was. I was like,
"Wow, man."
I was like, "Okay. That's sure." Awesome.
Well, that's a good point. Cause like, I remember working on Live Intel with you. Like there was, you know, we spent a lot of time working on the authenticity of how you move with guns and how you, you know, maybe not so much how you run up hills with, you know, with things
like battering rams.
But yeah, we, you know, that was all that shit was important because I mean, all that fit the look, you know, if you can't establish that these people are pro pretty quick, you're not going to buy into the rest of the picture.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know how it's just how my brain works that I have to do that. I can't ever have a movie with two people just talking or having an argument. It's always got to be some kind of, you know, thing because like, we did. It's got to be some action sequence. It's too hard for anyone else to do with no money, but I can do it. You know, the A-team and shit.
Dude, so you do Moab. And then what was that other thing? Because when we worked on this other one, like
then we did. Night. Yeah, we did Pennies for the Juggernaut after that, which was like three episodes of like this, I don't know, this guy who would kill annoying people.
Wait, no, but what was the thing with the fade? Do you remember the fade? We did that at K-Top. We worked through the night one night and like you had like a predator guy.
Oh shit. Yeah. What was that called?
I don't know. I don't remember the name of it because that was
the last broadcast. That's what it was called. The last broadcast. Yeah. I got to bug up my ass to see if I could do visual effects.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, let's just try a visual effects movie. Let's do, you know, what's the simplest thing we can do? Oh, let's do an invisible monster. Yeah, that's great. And I, you know, I had a friend of mine who was in the visual effects and I was like, can you do it? And he's like, yeah. So I was like, are you sure? Cause I'm about to spend like some money. So can you do the effects? And he's like, yeah. So I think we spent like $2,500 of whatever I could save or whatever. And we shot that movie and didn't we have like a fake bazooka in it or something?
Yeah, there was a fake bazooka. You had all your buddies that you play AR with brought in all of their AR, like their
those
sort of pellet rifles that look realistic and have, you know, they pretty much are one-to-one copies of real firearms. We had those.
Yeah.
So Ben, what is it like? Who do you think is like your influence? This is, as you know, as Long Beach as a
fighter. I was going to say who's because that's not me.
Yeah. So any influences? Like, are you Michael Bay or like, you know, John Frankenheimer or like what is like?
Yeah.
Oh well, you know, everybody likes John Frankenheimer, but I think probably like my earliest influence is probably like Ridley Scott, like Paul Verhoeven.
Like RoboCop.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like, probably my biggest influence is.
Are they right outside your door, Nye? What the?
It's the sounds of Long Beach, man. This is you know, it's what it is.
I think John McTiernan is probably my like.
It's
John McTiernan. Yeah,
right.
It's probably my biggest influence because I mean I've watched all his movies. And like, as I grew up, like I started, I think even like his directorial style around like Predator, cause I was like a big Predator fan when I was a kid, of course, Die Hard and all the popular movies we'd watch.
Right.
I just would like break, I would spend hours like watching his style and like breaking it down. And then,
right.
Mm.
And then as I got older, like I was, you know, more into some of like the, like Spike Lee, I was into, Akira Kurosawa a lot, and then like a lot of Japanese and Chinese directors. So it was kind of like, you know, it changed as I got older, but definitely like if I had to say one filmmaker that has influenced my filmmaking the most, it's John McTiernan. So
right,
that's kind of
what's your takeaway? Like, what is it? Is it the subject matter and the styles, or is it like also like his pacing and camera? Like, what kind of stuff is it that you?
It's definitely camera, his movement, like his editing pace, like. Just the way that he strings along shots, like there's one sequence in Predator where like when the first guy gets killed, Hawkins gets killed in the movie and like everyone's running after everyone. It's just like this series of cuts and cuts and cuts. And like, and he goes, the camera goes tracking alongside these guys running and it goes underneath the log and somehow he cuts that underneath the log move with like another move of people running and then the predator drags him off. And like, I watched that for hours trying to figure out how he came up with that.
Yeah.
Those sets of shots and like, and just, I mean, just everything that he did as a director back in that time, like really caught my attention. So it was,
he also like understands like what it is to be an action star, you know, like mm-hmm. it's like, Bruce Willis was sort of his, you know, what, his 30th choice or something like that. But yet he was able to, you know, still imbibe that guy with, like, you know, you are a presence, you know, like, it's yeah. like, and yeah. Predator too. I mean, obviously he stacked the deck with like Schwarzenegger and all the other guys, but it's, he definitely has a sense of like, this is the hero and you're really into that guy. You know, it's,
I always wondered if it was all him that made sure that Jean-Claude Van Damme wasn't going to be the Predator. Cause like for a while, that's how that movie started. The Predator was going to be this whole other thing.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. Yeah. the costume they had in mind for Van Damme was more, was not what came out.
Bug. It was like a bug or something.
Yeah. And then it was like a xenomorph. Yeah.
He kind of complained, and I'll throw Ridley Scott in there too if I didn't throw him in earlier.
You did.
But Van Damme was like too short, and then he started complaining about being in the jungle inside of a hot costume, which I'm sure was a legitimate complaint.
Sure, it was like
the Amazon jungle.
yeah. They weren't shooting it like in, you know, like in LA's, like in somebody's back lot. They shot that in a legit place. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, it was like a quit fire. Like, I believe, like, you know, Van Damme quit and he got fired and then they brought in, I think his name was John Michael Hall or something, like this really tall dude. And they redid, on the plane
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. They redesigned his costume and then, you know, the costume we all know now became real. And
So,
or Kevin Peter Hall.
That is.
So, what about being in the Bay Area? Like you guys, it sounds like you guys have, you know, enough of an underground scene with actors and friends and visual effects to be able to just like low budget crank out this kind of stuff. I mean, what's it like filming there?
Well, it's kind of, I mean, when we were younger, it was easier to crank out the low budget. Like, you know, nobody had the overhead, nobody had kids, nobody had to pay the bills. Like, it was just kind of like, you know, we were all looking for something to do. We'll get this done and
see if we can make something happen from making this one happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now, like, you know, my crew is still, you know, I love my crew. Shout out to my boys and girls out there.
Yeah.
I love my crew and they all still show up for me for little to no pay, for the most part. But I am very careful. I'm careful now about what I ask people to do because they got, you know, they got rent and kids and
time constraints.
So yeah, time constraints. Even I'm constrained now, like, you know.
It's what happens. It's what happens when you have that second kid. I think we all are in that fresh basket where the first kid, you're like, oh, I'm doing this so good, I'm going to try it again. And then you're like, oh, that's where all my free time went. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think literally my body revolted. Like I'm doing a movie now called The Lake Merritt Monster. And
yeah. We wanted to talk about that.
I was totally writing that. And then I was like, oh, I got to do a Kickstarter and I'm working and I have two kids. And like, I think my body just was like, nope. And shut down.
It just dumped it.
It just like revolted. And like, I was like, ah, I'm dying. I'm going to my doctor. I was like, doctor, I'm dying. And they're like,
you're a father too. Yeah.
You're just a filmmaker and a father of two.
Yeah.
They were like, you might want to bring down the stress in your life. I'm like, okay.
Great. Thank you. Thanks.
So I love the concept. Like, is a Lake Merritt monster? Is it like you get off the BART and then is there a lake in Lake Merritt?
It's like what, maybe 3 miles around. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's about 3.5 miles around.
Yeah. There it is. And so, you know, like you possibly could have. Now, is this sort of a Loch Ness monster, Ben, or is this more of a like a different kind of monster?
Well, when I first came up with the concept, I was watching The Host, like the actual movie, The Host. Right, and I was like, why is there no, there's got to be a monster in Lake Merritt. It stinks so bad. Like there should be a monster in Lake Merritt.
That's how it starts.
I started.
Yeah.
That would explain the stink because like, it is stinky.
It smells a lot better now. But but I started tinkering with that idea. And then like as I researched, I found that there like a 1940s or 1950s like ad for the Lake Merritt Monster. And there's like a sculpture called the Lake Merritt Monster. And there's like this whole like underground Lake Merritt Monster Society of people who have like
right
thought
on.
That there was a lake. And I was like, I thought I was all original and shit. Like, Lake Merritt Monster.
No one's done this. I'm yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, no, there is a whole, there's like a whole mythology. So I, you know, I had to create my own mythology per se to, you know, not have to go talking to folks, but.
Right. It was then you're going to get constrained like, by their story and you wanted to tell like.
What? Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to kind of just make up my own thing. And so like, yeah, there's been several, there's, I think someone even did like a small no budget series about the Oakness monster or something like that. I don't know, but I think I ran across something. I was like, why, where did that come from? But all right. But yeah, like there's this kind of history and mythology of the Lake Merritt monster. And, that people have different designs of what it looks like. Some people have like a dragon. Some people have like, you know, the creature from the Black Lagoon kind of design, but
sure, like somebody on two legs as opposed to sort of a big like hulking bog monster like the Swamp Thing or something, or you know.
Yeah, but I took my monster from legends from like Sesotho. Just I'm probably fucking that name up. Sesotho. Don't kill me, South African people. Their legend of a monster. I'm not going to say which monster because then I'll just spoil it.
Don't do that. Yeah. Just give us a little flavor, a little taste.
Yeah. But I got that from a African legend, my monster, and kind of just built it around that and did the a little bit of the mythology of Oakland and more the kind of good and bad shit that's happening out here. You know, that's gotten, in my opinion, a little bit worse. Cause I mean, when I started writing it, it was bad, but now like I went to go do, I think I did like a Kickstarter video or something to shoot some of it. And like, I'm at the lake and it's just like so many homeless people. And I'm just like, holy shit. And there's like people just running past like this. It's not that it may or may not be their problem, but it was just amazing to see like the intersection of poor people and rich people at the lake now, and how they're all kind of meeting in this weird, you know, with the ducks and the geese and shit.
Yeah.
So it's just,
yeah.
So and, it's like the
children's fairyland. Yeah.
So the subtext is like, it's not just a monster movie. You've got like this backdrop with, you know, inequality and the way the Bay Area is moving. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that. Well,
and then like, you've also got, it's sort of a coming of age thing too, right? Cause I went to the reading of it and, sort of the idea is that there's sort of a, you know, maybe like a stand by me kind of group of kids. Like there's like a,
yeah, it's very, you know, that it definitely came out of the '80s kind of Stand By Me, Goonies, you know, it was Spielberg-esque that I was thinking about. Cause I remember then when I was working on the project, I saw Stranger Things and I was like, how come there's never one of these in the city?
Yeah.
It's always some suburban thing. And I'm like, and so, I mean, it just kind of reinforced what I was already doing. And I mean, what Stranger Things is like 2 or 3 years old now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I had been writing a lot of just scenes for years. And then like last year I really got serious and wrote it when I got a residency at SF Film. And so I like sat down and like buckled down and wrote that. And I was like, no, this has got to be in Oakland. This has got to be inner city kids. I didn't want to do like quote unquote ghetto inner city kids. Like I wanted to do kids that had brains and cause I don't know any kids that don't have like brains and imagination and aren't trying crazy things. And that might just be my privilege of the kids that I know. But even when I was younger, I was like, I wasn't into that. I was into like, oh man, you know, how do we mix this and make that and do the science experiment? And I ride a skateboard and I listen to rock and roll music. And, you know, and like it was like, and I listen to rap music and I listen to this other kind of music. Like it was just, I was way more of an eclectic youth, and the youth that I surrounded myself with were way more eclectic. And I was like, I want to talk about those kids. Cause I didn't feel like those kids ever get talked about. Like it's either you're a suburbanite white kid or you know, you're this ghetto black kid who's dodging drugs. Like, kids in the middle, damn it.
Yeah. There's a bigger palette, right? There's a bigger palette of, you know, like colors that interact, you know, you've got people who, like you said, I mean, they look one way. So you want to peg them a certain way, but they're actually not. And isn't that something we want to see in film and TV?
And that's, it's better storytelling probably.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're coming up on 30 minutes. So just like the last kind of
you know, a couple of questions here.
Yeah.
Like, sure. Talk about a little bit about like your production process, just to sort of, you know, you said you kind of came up with this idea by watching the host, and, you know, are you just writing and then you do a little bit of kickstarting and you talk to some actors? I mean, what do you think, how do you think like an idea and a film actually comes together? Is it just a, you know, kind of run and gun kind of stuff, or do you actually do planning? I mean, what's sort of your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, as far as like an idea, like generally they just pop into my head. I'll be chilling and, you know, or I'll be wake up at 5 a.m. or something. I'll be like on the BART and then the idea hits and I'm like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And then I kind of write it down and then I kind of wait to see if it's just a passing fad or I'm like really interested in devoting time to, to it.
Yeah. Cause sometimes you wake up and you're like, oh, that was a bad idea.
Yeah. That was three whiskeys in. I'm going to leave that one alone. See if it comes back. Yeah. If it boomerangs on you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it comes and it just won't leave me alone, then like it can be a year or two of research. I mean, you know, that's generally where I start is I go, okay, this is the idea. Oh, let's say the idea is time travel. I need to research the latest developments of time travel. So I end up getting 10 books on time travel and trying to talk to a scientist, like, and figure out like, okay, am I doing realistic time travel? Am I doing playful time travel? Or how do I think the biggest thing is, how do I not be cliche and tell a new story
there
or a new way of looking at time travel? Yeah. And so, I mean, like when I wrote my time travel movie, that was what I did. And so I went and tried to figure out the most realistic way of doing time travel and then wrap it around in a new and different way. And so then after that, I figure out, is this a large scale studio needed movie, or is this a movie I can maybe shoot for no money, or is it somewhere in the middle? And then I start to figure it out that way. I mean, you know, some stuff, like I wrote a series called Full Moon Run about, like, you know, the moon and like espionage on the moon. And if there was an actual moon base that's been hidden there since the 70s. And
I love
like
it.
What the United States has been doing.
I fucking love that shit.
Yeah.
I love it.
So I wrote that and I was like, I cannot make this for less than, you know, 20,000. Right. But then I came up with another series that I pitched Darren on, was like, it's called Henching.
Yeah.
And it's about these two henchmen who were just like trying. It was kind of like based on this. When I first met Darren, he did this really cool.
Like, I made this monologue up for Live Intel, for the audition for Live Intel. Cause I was just like, I only had like Shakespeare. Like I'd only remembered like Shakespeare. So I was just like, all right, well what would the Joker say if he was talking about how he needs these two henchmen to get Batman to fall into this trap? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the most brilliant shit. It's still one of the most brilliant auditions I've ever had. And I was just like,
don't let that shit go to your head.
Oh my God, dude. I'm going to get drunk now. That's it for my day. I'm good. I
feel it going. And I just like, I ran it. And like the next thing I know, dude, I had like, I had three episodes, 15 pages, like just kind of like just funny shit. And I was like, And then I was sitting there talking with him and another guy who's a fantastic actor, director.
Rajiv.
And we're just like spitballing and shit's just falling out of the sky. And I'm like, this is gold.
Yeah.
This is gold.
Yeah. Yeah. There's stuff like, in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, it was like, so then I was like thinking the other day and I was like, man, why don't I just call Darren and go shoot this thing in his garage?
Yeah.
Like, let's just go shoot it in the garage. Who cares? Let's just have a mic and, you know, and make it happen. So it's like, those are kind of the thought processes that I go through and how I try to like decide where to take a project. And if a project is even like feasible right now, it might not be feasible. I might just write it and shelve it and wait till there's an opportunity.
Yeah.
So
Ben, where can everyone find you and more about more information and what's, you know, next steps? So anybody interested in seeing more about Bay Area monsters or action flicks or whatever else?
Yeah, is your Kickstarter still up? What's the scoop on that?
I haven't. The Kickstarter got pushed back just because I literally didn't have the bandwidth to do it. And a lot of my team that I had brought on to do the Kickstarter were like, they, one lady had a thesis, another person was like out of town. So like, we just moved it back to May. So I think we're looking at a May start date to do the Kickstarter. So don't worry about that yet. But if you want to find me, you can go to www.BenjaminMulholland, like Mulholland Drive,
right.com.
Or you can go to RazFilm.com. Or you can go to the Lake Merritt Monster Movie.com.
Nice.
See, okay, all three of those work.
Nice, dude.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, hopefully something soon. I mean, we've been, I've got a couple meetings. I actually have to be down in LA in 2 weeks. So I've got a couple meetings that are possibly, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Nothing I can talk about yet, but we're working on trying to get something going.
Right on, man.
So we'll see. Well, and SF Film's been really great. Yeah.
Well, thanks a bunch, man. It's awesome. I mean, you're making the kind of shit that Dee and I obviously love. This kind of like,
yeah, this is sort of what makes all of the bullshit worth it, is being able to do what you want to do. Like, you
that's
know,
fun.
Yeah.
Do stuff that's fun, right? Yeah. You know, that has actual interest to it. So,
yeah, I mean, that's all you have in the end of the day, right? Like, I mean, you know, there's no guarantee you're going to get made or, you know, or anything like that. It's like, it better be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That might be all you get out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for joining us, man. It's been really
thank you so much for taking time on your Sunday, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was fun. Memory lane, right?
Talk to you right now. I'm busy leveling up in Slutbot. So I'm almost, yep, now I'm level 7 now. In real life and in
your level 7 sluttiness.
Dude, I could fire some flirts your way that would probably have your pants off, but I mean, you're a married man now, and I don't want to do that.
Do you think it's like, instead of like a light or a tweak, it's like sluts or something?
Yeah, or like, how? What are the audibles that come off of the slut bot to let you know that you just leveled? Like,
no. All right, welcome back. That was our interview with Ben Mulholland. That was super fun.
He needs no slut bot in his life. He needs no slut bot.
He knows that. So be sure to visit him online at BenMulholland.com. And he's got
also Razzmatazz Films, I think. Yeah.
But I think you can find him, Ben Mulholland. And then also the Lake Merritt Monster is his website.
Yeah, man, that is going to be some cool stuff.
So reach out, check him out, help him finish it up. So, so Dee, before we wrap, I just want to say, you know, welcome back to season 2. We've got some interesting things on tap, obviously, interviews like the one we just heard, but everything that we were going to try to do in season 1 that kind of fell off the table, sidekicks, what were some of the other stuff we were talking about?
PG Montgomery, we got to get that dude. We got to go back across the pond and get him back on the horn.
So we're going to be lining up a bunch of stuff, but we're gonna buckle down and put our shoulder into to do another 10. So if you like what we're doing, please follow us you know. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff. But also, please like us or leave a review on iTunes.
Yeah, that would be the bomb.
That does get us listeners. And we've had a handful of episodes that have been doing pretty well. So
yeah, you were telling me about that. It's pretty exciting.
We appreciate if anyone would leave a couple of comments. And what you want to hear, what you want to see, we're here to do it for you, because you know we are your personal slut.
We're your slut bot.
Yeah.
We will teach you how to flirt in the real world because it's done so well for us. So very, very well.
All right. So thanks very much for joining us. And we will see you next time.
We'll catch you on the flip-flop.
Kind of a big deal.
The Night King does as the Night King will.